Welcome in, everyone, to the 76th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. We are your hosts, Toby and Colin, coming at you after the conclusion of Week 3 of the 2021 NFL season. Toby, how was Week 3 for you?
You know what? As a Steelers fan, terrible.
That's true.
As a fantasy owner, pretty 50-50. But I do still love football.
Yeah, fair enough. I had a good week. Won 100% of my matchups.
That's
feeling
a good
pretty
percentage.
Good about that. And I'm also not a Steelers fan, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter to keep up with everything we've got going on over there. As you already probably saw from this podcast title, we're going to talk about players that have either leveled up or leveled down throughout the first 3 weeks of the NFL season. And we're going to go through a list here that we've compiled and talk about, like, do we think these players have legitimately leveled up in such a way that they are going to maintain this production throughout both this season, and we're talking dynasty here, for the years to come? Or is this more of a mirage, maybe something you need to capitalize on? It's just something we don't think is really going to continue. So we're actually going to start here at the wide receiver position. The first guy we've got here is the wide receiver 2 of all of fantasy so far through the first 3 weeks of the NFL season. Someone that we had ranked a hell of a lot lower than wide receiver 2, and that's Mike Williams. Mike Williams, obviously on the Chargers, has been absolutely killing it. He, at this point, has 4 touchdowns over 3 weeks, has 12, 10, and then 9 targets over the 3 weeks, and in fact, has out-targeted Keenan Allen on his own team. He is the clear target leader. Toby, do you think this Mike Williams emergence is here to stay?
I do. The number one thing barring him from continuing his elevation is injury. And I'm not one to project injury and say, nah, in week 7, he's going to fall on his back after going for a crazy jump ball. Entirely likely, knowing his past
history.
It's
possible, yeah.
But he is looking fantastic. He clearly has rapport with Justin Herbert. You need to only watch the Chiefs game to see them going, you know what? I'm more confident in throwing a fade pattern to Mike Williams than I am kicking a short field goal. And at that point, that speaks to remarkable confidence in Mike Williams. The man's leveled up, and I consider him being a much earlier round pick next year come this time.
Yeah, so I could easily see that. And if you look through Mike Williams' history in the league, in his sophomore season, he had 10 touchdowns. Then in his third season, he had over 1,000 yards receiving. This is a player that's been able to show incredible production here and there, but he hasn't been able to really put it all together until this season so far. And the reason why I somewhat agree with you that he can continue this pace and be like a truly elite, potentially wide receiver 1 in fantasy is because this offense is so much better now than it was a few years ago for Mike Williams and Keenan Allen that I think they can both be supported as really high-end assets, because it's all about the emergence of Justin Herbert. And yes, last year Justin Herbert had a record-breaking rookie season, but he's going to even improve upon that. And those numbers are going to be a lot better than we saw out of aging Philip Rivers as well. So more so than anything, I think he can sustain that fantasy production because he is in a much stronger offense. I do think Keenan Allen will outproduce him from here on out, but he can be that leveled up wide receiver asset, just someone you're totally willing to plug in and play every single week, assuming he does stay healthy, which I have my fingers crossed he will continue to stay healthy, because like Toby said, I'm never going to bank on injury, but he is one of those players that after years and years and years of getting hurt, it definitely freaks me out a little bit counting on the guy. Another wide receiver that Toby definitely called to be the stud he has been through 3 weeks is Brandon Cooks.
Boys, Brandon Cooks is a fantastic wide receiver. He's the guy. He is on an absolutely putrid Texans team.
Yeah.
Which, surprisingly, hasn't been that bad with Tyrod Taylor. I'm going to be honest, Tyrod Taylor impressed me.
Uh-huh.
David Mills has not impressed me. He is not going to be a long-term asset.
Yeah.
But Brandon Cooks is doing exactly as expected in that he's clearly the best wide receiver on the offense. The Texans are clearly going to be behind or racing for it in almost every game. So Brandon Cooks is going to be the most open guy in the field, targeting the most.
Yeah, honestly, the difference between those two quarterbacks, it's like the two different arguments for why Brandon Cooks may not be that good was, one, he wasn't going to be the total target leader like we expected he would be, but that was one of the scenarios where he wouldn't be that good for fantasy. The more likely scenario where he wouldn't be good for fantasy was that this Houston Texans offense was going to be so putrid that they wouldn't be able to sustain any fantasy points. With Tyrod Taylor, that second one was dispelled. They were a good enough team that they can put up some fantasy points. Once now they've switched over to David Mills, because of the injury to Tyrod, of course, their offense didn't look that good to me. But Davis Mills only has eyes for one receiver, and it's Brandon Cooks. He didn't even want to target anyone else. So as long as one of these two things is true, either he has a quarterback that's going to be locked onto him every single week, or this offense isn't actually that bad. As long as one of these two things is true, he's going to continue to be great. I think the main thing when you're looking at the dynasty value of Brandon Cooks, though, is that he's a talented wide receiver that I know it feels like he's been around the league for a ton of years, but he's still got a good few years left. He's 28. He could easily play till he's 31 or 32 at this type of high level. And so we were undervaluing this guy, and I do agree he's here to stay. Next, we've got Jacoby Myers, and this is to a lesser degree, but Jacoby Myers has been the absolute clear wide receiver one for the New England Patriots, obviously led by Mac Jones, and I think throughout the process, you've been hotter on this guy than I have. We collectively, when going through our preseason dynasty rankings, were a bit lower on Jacoby Myers, so I'm curious to ask you how confident you are that Jacoby Myers' breakout is going to sustain for the rest of this season and beyond.
I am confident that Myers will remain the number one target for the season. The issue I have is that I don't trust this Jones-led offense of the Patriots. While he is still getting the most of his targets, it's rare at this point that the Patriots are finding themselves in the red zone, which is an issue in terms of scoring fantasy points. So long term, you need to understand that Myers' upside is capped in the offense that he's running in, unless Mac Jones shows to level up, which at this point is too early to say. I do think he's going to be the best asset for the Patriots moving forward this year, and at the very least, is going to be the best asset to own on the Patriots offense somehow. Mm-hmm. I'm not confident in saying, you know, this guy for the next 5 years is going to be fantastic, but he's definitely worth picking up if you can find a way to go target him.
Yeah, so I agree at this point. He is going to be a high floor, safe, solid option for this season. My fear with owning Jacoby for the rest of his career in Dynasty is I still am not 100% sold on the talent. And that doesn't mean the talent of being an adequate NFL wide receiver, but it's the talent that in general, in most offenses, you need to have a certain level of talent to see 10 targets a game, to command that level percentage of your offense. And that's what he's been doing so far. He's got 29 targets over three games, 9, 6, and then 14. And despite having no touchdowns yet, which honestly just goes to show he's been productive even with no touchdowns so far, I do fear a little bit that with the ambiguity of how this offense will be going forward, whether it is spending money on guys like Aguilar, who he does look better than, I've got to admit, or just drafting people in the future, they've obviously taken their shots in the past. I think that he doesn't fill that role as someone that is absolutely locked in their position. He could hold down this slot role, which is an important spot in this Belichick offense, but I do definitely have some fear, so I'm not bullish on keeping him. I think if you get the right offer, if someone wants to use him for this year, maybe you're not competing or have such good depth, he's still more of that bench guy for you, I might be willing to still sell him, and I hope that isn't take lock because I just fear that he might not hold down this job. Then the final guy, and we don't need to speak about him too much because we talked about him last week, and that is Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp is the wide receiver one in fantasy.
He's just fantastic.
And he is Matthew Stafford's new roommate, best friend, breakfast partner, whatever you want to say. He is absolutely Stafford's number one read. He is legit. He is a wide receiver one. He won't be the wide receiver one probably come year's end, but he's going to be up there. He's probably top five because it doesn't look like anything's changing anytime soon. I would love to have him. His value in Dynasty has ballooned, and for good reason. I think this is going to maintain. As long as Stafford is at the helm of this offense, it seems clear that Cooper Kupp is his number one target. The guy I want to talk about a little more in this offense, because I'm sure we're both in on Cooper Kupp, is the other supposedly wide receiver 1/2 in this offense as we transition over to some people who have leveled down. Let's start it off with Robert Woods.
Robert, uh-oh, man. This is something that would have been almost impossible to project because in terms of offensive changes, you really just have Stafford coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, you have the deep threat of D-Jax, but that shouldn't alter your entire offense. So just for example, for him to only have three catches in the first 3 weeks, I mean, he's just no longer a viable asset in terms of a week-to-week starter.
Mm-hmm. You can't have a ton of confidence putting him in your lineup thus far. He has seen 19 targets over 3 weeks, which is not bad. And I do think this will continue to be a prolific offense that will be very efficient. The question is really, do you think this is, you know, near the end for Robert Woods? Is he more just of one of those depth guys that you're kind of willing to start in a pinch but not willing to count on? Or is this a blip on the radar and you think he's going to turn it around and go back to being one of, at least at worst, one of those safe floor guys that you can still start every week? How do you see him going forward, Toby?
And the Rams offense is too good to just discount him as an asset. With only 3 weeks gone by, there's still an opportunity for injuries to happen, him to emerge, and him to actually get more involved in the offense. But you've every right to be nervous at this point because Stafford has clearly chosen his guy. No longer is it a Cup or Woods situation. It's a Cup.
And Woods.
You have Woods, but at this point, he is an afterthought in at least terms of the reads that Stafford is making. They've been trying to get him involved in kind of shorter stuff and different kinds of routes than you've typically seen him made. I would be substantially more worried than I think your average owner if I had Woods. If I have Woods right now, I'm just shipping him off.
Okay. So he is wide receiver 46 at this point. Yeah. Obviously, disappointing. And my thought of him with him is more the other end of it, that I think a lot of people are probably really hitting the panic button on Robert Woods, and I would be willing to go out and see how little it takes at this point to go acquire him. I think he will not be quite as good as he was. He, like you were saying, is not the number one read anymore. He is the clear number two, but the clear number two on this good of an offense is likely a very valuable guy. And this role is not as valuable as it once was being the number two because Van Jefferson is involved. Apparently, DeSean Jackson is involved. Tyler Higbee is involved. And Daryl Henderson looks fine too. But I still do want the wide receiver two in this offense. I think it will be Woods going forward. And that probably will extend for multiple seasons as well. He may not be the locked-in guy he was, but I think this is the low point of his value. You can probably get him and have him as a useful flex guy, and the price you might be able to get him at right now, if you do so, I think you could be really happy about that come the end of the season. The next wide receiver that's been disappointing, and he is more of one of those high-end guys, and that's Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson has really disappointed me, partially because I don't think he has had quite the level of separation and dominance that he has in previous years, but much, much, much more so. This offense
is stinky.
Looked pretty rough.
It's just
stinky. That's a good word.
Justin Fields is not allowing him to have the fantasy season of which you drafted him.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I mean, we only have a game of sample size with Fields, but it looked bad.
But I think people weren't drafting him thinking, oh yeah, Dalton will rip him the ball all year.
That's true.
Surely there's going to be a quarterback upgrade. I do not think that upgrade is happening this year.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that could also extend to your, you know, favorite sleeper, Darnell Mooney. He's someone that I wouldn't even want to roster and redraft anymore.
No. Yeah. It's very unfortunate.
It's looking sketchy. I think with Allen Robinson, I mean, he has 21 targets through 3 weeks, especially that week when he saw 11 targets and it looked a lot more promising despite the fact he only put up 35 yards. But if he didn't save himself with a week two touchdown, he's got 35 yards, 24 yards and 27 yards. Those are his three games. That is atrocious. That is not even close to startable worthy. And this is a guy that has perennially been a wide receiver one. I am concerned about how his season will go. I don't think it'll be this bad. I'm sure there's weeks you can start him, but you can't confidently start him every week anymore. Yeah. The bigger question for me with his dynasty value is, I think this guy is much more likely at this point to go through this season and be like, do you know what?
See ya.
I'm out. I'm going to go to a different team. And he's still talented. The percent chance to me that he leaves, finds himself in a different offense, is a number one for a better offense is reasonably high. And so for almost that alone, I think I would be willing to go buy him. And maybe you can't count on him this year. Maybe he's only one of those bench guys that you only start in bye week hell. But you potentially have a guy that next year can step into a role that is much more advantageous, can be the number one for a team, and go back to those wide receiver one ways we've seen for the last few years. So I do think he's more of a buy for me.
Next wide receiver we would be remiss not to talk about, even though it's unfortunate to speak
yeah,
about.
Yeah, we don't have to mention it.
It's Denzel Mims. Denzel Mims is an asset that we both own, and...
not anymore.
We both owned.
And traded him this week.
We got him off the team as soon as possible. He's getting healthy scratched. And at this point, well, yes, you can blame a lot of things due to the Jets' offense. Denzel Mims has not rose to the occasion. He is not beating out the likes of any of the other Jet wide receivers. In fact, He's getting healthy scratched. Denzel Mims, it's time to move on. Colin and I very quickly included him in a trade to get another asset. Got him off the team. Denzel Mims is time to go.
Yeah, the problem with Denzel Mims is right now, you're hoping, oh, well, hopefully he gets traded. And that reminds me of N'Keal Harry. When I think N'Keal Harry, I think draft bust. And go back a year and a bit ago, me and Toby really loved Denzel Mims coming into the NFL, loved him out of the draft, picked him up, drafted him. We're very excited about it, and he does at this point look like a draft bust, at least for fantasy. I don't think he will be a valuable asset because he, at this point, he's getting healthy scratched for players like Braxton Berrios, who's getting like 9 targets a game in this slot role, which, by the way,
wild.
Watch out for Crowder. He's going to take that slot role, and apparently that's the only place Zach Wilson looks. But beyond that, he's also getting healthy scratch for someone like Jeff Smith. And you're like, okay, Jeff Smith, I've seen this argument. Well, Denzel Mims doesn't play special teams. Jeff Smith, they still have him on the active roster because he plays special teams. Jeff Smith, in week 2, played 1 snap of special teams. He's not even like a main special teams guy. This isn't someone who's impacting the roster. If they wanted Denzel Mims to even be minorly evolved, maybe even just put him in red zone packages or anything like that, they don't see him as a useful asset to them winning football games. And that is a massive, massive red flag. You probably don't want him on your dynasty teams anymore. As much as we were big fans, it's time to cut bait. Now let's move over to the running back position. And the first guy that I think we definitely need to talk about. This is the running back 8 as of now through 3 weeks. And it is Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yep. Sorry, Mike Davis what? Owners, but Cordarrelle Patterson looks better. He looks more explosive, and he's getting more targets. He is so scary to start. I own him in at least 3 leagues, and I'm happy I own him. Haven't started him yet, because it is tough to pull the trigger on a guy like Cordarrelle, solely because we know he's not getting the snap counts that you want. He's by no means a bell cow back. He is too good to overlook at this point. For whatever reason, Matt Ryan, as a passer, has downgraded to the point that you need to start looking at this Atlanta backfield as, oh, these are guys that are going to get quite a few touches.
And targets. Patterson, and to targets. This point, is the number 2 receiver.
Yeah, and scarily, shockingly, I want Patterson. I've gone out and pursued him on every waiver wire that I can. I do believe he's going to be a useful fantasy asset this year.
Okay, I am so hesitant when it comes to Cordarrelle Patterson.
Totally fair.
So we have a 30-year-old running back who, despite being a first-round pick, has never really broken out for fantasy. Last year, you know, he had a couple of random games where he was somewhat useful as a backup, but even then, never really got on the field consistently. He's still a great kick and punt returner. He's still doing that on the Falcons right now in the first 3 weeks of the season, and he's gotten incredible fantasy success through 3 weeks so far in the receiving game. He has 16 targets and 13 receptions through those games, and he's also scored a touchdown in the receiving game as well. He's clearly involved in that role, but I think it's a mistake to start him right now. I think this is unsustainable production because Mike Davis is still getting the snaps over him. To this point, his snap percentage is 33%, 33%, and 42%.
These are very low.
These are backup numbers. I think what he has done to this point is what Tony Pollard has done to this point, which is impress in those limited touches, but he's not a guy you can rely on. If I can sell Cordarrelle Patterson in Dynasty, I am moving so quickly to do so. He might have startable games through the rest of the season as he has so far, but I think he's also going to have some significant dud games, and I'd rather those be on other people's rosters, especially if I can get anything of use coming back my way. So I'm in a hard sell with Cordarrelle. I'm so scared of having him on my roster.
That's totally fair.
He's just sketchy. I don't know. Can't do it.
We got to talk about an entire backfield next.
Yeah, I think they're definitely worth talking about.
And that's DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams, two Detroit Lions. DeAndre Swift has been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamal Williams is currently the running back 9, I believe.
These are the running backs 3 and 9.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. Swift, some people might argue, that's not even a level up because I've always had him as my running back 1 or 2.
Whatever.
That was based off of projection. And we know he's talented and all that, but we actually hadn't seen to this point the fantasy production. Well, it's happening now. He is still splitting with Jamal Williams, yet somehow both of them are top 10 running backs.
I think the number one reason I attribute to this is Goff's inability to push the ball downfield. You can blame this on, you know, a lack of consistent wide receivers or just a lack of wide receiver talent and depth, and I buy that. That is okay. Goff is not able to be looking at 30-yard out routes. Goff is not able to be developing rapport with wide receivers who have not proven themselves yet. The amount of dump-offs and the amount of run game that Dan Campbell is trying to assert with his offense is making it so that this is becoming quite the formidable duo.
Yeah, Swift through 3 games has 23 targets, and Jamal Williams through 3 games has 14 targets. These are both guys who are very relevant in this offense. Jamal Williams has played over 35% of snaps in each game. Like, he's more than just your average backup.
And he's getting in the end zone, too.
In that committee. And yeah, you're right. He has 2 touchdowns through 3 weeks as well. These are players that will continue to be relevant. The question really is, Swift, in the current situation, feels like a locked-in running back 1 because he's going to see the amount of targets that in PPR that'll just balloon his value. Do you think that will continue when the offense improves, the quarterback is maybe different, and the wide receivers are not as atrocious as they are right now?
I'm far more confident with Swift's value moving forwards. He, to me, has impressed me with all that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jamal Williams is a guy that I could sell because I do agree that he's been fantastic. He's obviously popped in the end zone a couple times. He's still the backup, and he's not going to overtake Swift.
Of course, it
will not happen. And I'd be happy to start moving him as an asset that right now is a top 10 running back.
Yeah, I agree.
And market him as such.
I guess my question is anyone really valuing him that high? I'm not sure. But yeah, if they are, like, this is something you gotta reach out and find out. Throw him on your trade block and see if people are seeing him now as like, oh, this is a startable guy I can use. To me, Jamal Williams isn't someone I'm happy to be starting in my lineup at any point. But if you can trade him to someone who does view him in that way, I definitely agree. Also, if either of these guys ever get hurt, they don't really have any third stringer to name. I mean, Jamar Jefferson's there, but I don't think he's anything too spectacular. The other guy, whether it's Swift because Jamal's hurt or Jamal because Swift's hurt, the other guy will be fantastic in this offense. On the flip side, disappointing running backs are definitely out there as well, and I think the number one guy who has disappointed us all is Ronald Jones.
Oh, yeah, he's looked very poor. Fournette has entirely overtaken him, and whether this be due to early season fumbles or lack of confidence or just Arians putting him in the doghouse, not letting him out, Ronald Jones is at this point a guy you do not start unless you are desperate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has, you know, really lost that role. A lot of people, despite kind of splitting, going back and forth with Fournette last year, were thinking that this season he'd really take over that role. I remember even after a mediocre week 1 performance, Arians came out in week two and said, Ronald Jones is our starter week two. And people are like, okay, we still have something here. And that didn't really come to be. The problem also comes from the fact that you have Gio Bernard very relevant on third downs. And he did get hurt this week in week three, but it just is an MCL sprain and is day to day at this point. So even if he misses a week, it doesn't really affect Ronald Jones's dynasty value. Ronald Jones, I mean, it's not quite to the same degree as Denzel Mims, but it feels fully like you think at this point you need him to get traded or go to another team to have a lot of fantasy value. And anytime that's the case, your chances are very low. So my thoughts right now in any form of deep dynasty roster is you hold him because his value is very, very low. And the second he signs on another roster, you trade him immediately because I am not confident in his ability to hold down a job. I don't think the talent is as spectacular as a lot of people were expecting it to be. And any little bit of value I can get out of trading him as soon as there's some hype once he signs for a different roster, I'm going to capitalize on that. Yep.
Next running back we got to talk about, Trey Sermon. To get into the league sometimes as a rookie, it takes a lot of fortunate injuries around you to build your own narrative. And Trey Sermon seemed fully available to author his own success in the league and has not really done a whole lot with it. Now, I understand. He had the terrible hit. He had what is definitely a concussion, I think. He's picked up some knocks, absolutely. But Trey Sermon has not shelled out in the NFL so far, and I am worried about him.
I would be too. The difference we saw since the rookie draft at this point, like obviously he was a somewhat early pick, we were excited about the guy, then clearly panic. He gets scratched week one, and Elijah Mitchell, another rookie who was drafted many rounds later than Trey Sermon in the same draft, got the starting role above him, or the backup role, which then became the starting role once Mostert went out. And he got a couple rushes week two, clearly wasn't the guy, but then unfortunately he got hurt, got hit his head, and then week three, everyone is hurt. And he gets 10 whole rushes in this week three game. He accumulates 31 yards and a touchdown. I think the biggest problem here is, though, throughout the game, it sure looked like he lost the confidence of his coaching staff. They were going out of their way. They put Deebo Samuel in the backfield often. Even more often, they were using Kyle Juszczyk, who, in his own right, is a great fullback.
Great fullback.
But he's a fullback, so
He shouldn't be beating out a star rookie running back.
Mm-hmm. So even though he punched in that touchdown, the future looks a bit bleak for Sermon right now. It really reminds me of Keyshawn Vaughn to this day, you know, someone we had hype for. But the difference between these two guys is Keyshawn Vaughn, from the start, he never got an opportunity to play because he was getting heavily outplayed at practice. Sermon was also getting heavily outplayed in practice. You could show this by the fact that Hasty and Mitchell were on the starting roster in week one. Yeah. But the difference is Keyshawn Vaughn didn't happen to have five injuries in front of him in the depth chart. Sermon did get that opportunity, and he did not quite take advantage of it. If I had the opportunity to trade him today, I would be all over it because you might be able to sell him right now because he might be the starter in week four, depending on the injuries and how they play out. And he was able to punch in that touchdown, so his fantasy points doesn't look too bad. But yeah, I would be in full panic mode. I'd be trying to move Trey Sermon right now. Now let's move over to the quarterback position and a couple guys who have apparently leveled up. And this first guy has even been getting some MVP talks. And that is quarterback of the 3-0 Las Vegas Raiders, Derek Carr. Toby, has Derek Carr leveled up?
No. I'm not buying these MVP odds. Derek Carr has always been a serviceable quarterback. I think he's been a little bit of an underrated quarterback. He is not the fantasy asset that you were trading for. In fact, trade him away as soon as possible. I understand that he's had highly productive weeks. I totally get that. This is not the season of Derek Carr. This is not when he changes into some sort of gunslinging guy. Yes, he has amazing rapport with Waller, and I understand that, you know what? You have his wide receivers doing much better for him than they were last year. But Derek Carr is not going to be substantially different, or at the very least, is not going to make up for any deficits you take for trading for him at the quarterback position. Right now, I believe he's quarterback number 8. It's good. He's a top 10 quarterback. That's totally fine. But the difference between him and, let's say, the 12th best quarterback is not substantial enough that I'm confident in going out and pursuing him. Especially, I know we're 3 weeks in. He has been fantastic. You can't take it away from him. I'm not going after him.
I'll play some devil's advocate because I don't think I'm clamoring to go get Derek Carr anywhere anyway, but you know, he is what seems to be a very useful quarterback too if you're in Superflex. I would say my counter-argument would be, so you admit, like, Derek Carr has played quite well for a bunch of years. I think we both talked about that he's a bit underrated. He's been a top 20 guy almost every year of his career.
Mm-hmm.
The last time Derek Carr had this good of receiving options was when he had Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, I would say. You know, he's got Waller, full-fledged, elite, number one target, tight end. Then you also have Henry Ruggs, if not good for fantasy. Definitely good for the offense, spreads the defense, and makes some big plays. Bryan Edwards is starting to come into his own and making some big plays as well. And Hunter Renfrow has been a fantastic, underneath, reliable target. The one reason why I think Derek Carr could level up in his fantasy production is that, I mean, last year he was the quarterback 14 by the end of the year, which I think is surprising to me. And at least his trio of wide receivers themselves have leveled up. So I think he can level up by proxy. So I think he could become one of those top 12 guys. He might maintain that level.
I agree. And I think he's going to be good. And I think he will continue to be great all season. But I don't think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback by the end of the year. And I think going out to get him right now is going out to get him when his price is super high. While there's MVP talk swirling around him, I would not pursue him. Wait till he has just an off week. Even three off weeks. Mm-hmm. Then you can go get him if you want. But right now, you're going for him when it's too hot. For example, next week, he's away to the Chargers. That's not going well for him. I would wait until that point.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Great argument. The other quarterback I think we need to talk about, a little bit younger, a little bit more athletic, question mark? Daniel Jones, only one spot behind him, is at quarterback 9 through 3 weeks.
You have to call him more athletic. Danny yeah. Dimes has designed runs now. He has RPOs. Like, you can't take it away from him.
Here's the question, though. Is a better runner equal sign more athletic?
Yeah.
He's a better runner. I don't know if he's more athletic.
That's fair enough.
So Daniel Jones, he is the number 9 quarterback to this point. And not only has he been solid in the passing game, and I think the most incredible thing, he has 0 interceptions this season. That's crazy if you know Daniel Jones.
It's just wild.
But beyond that, he also has been a very good runner. In 3 games, he's rushed for 27 yards and a touchdown, 95 yards and a touchdown, and then 39 yards. That's really good. So as long as he can continue to play this turnover-free football and rushing quite a lot, he could easily maintain this fantasy production.
There's also, if you remember, he had a 65-yard run called back for a holding penalty.
That's true.
65-yard
CJ Board. How dare
run.
You, CJ
touchdown
Board.
Run.
So Toby, is this going to continue?
Yeah, I think he's going to be looked at as a viable fantasy asset moving forwards, which is kind of crazy. But the Giants' defense looks ultimately atrocious this year, and he is going to be throwing a lot more. He seems to have matured in his decision-making, at least over these first 3 weeks. And like I said, the most important thing is he has these RPOs where people are not respecting Danny Dimes as a runner. And shockingly, he's just picking up these 12-yard chunk plays that are really adding up for fantasy. Do I think he's the solution to take the Giants to the Super Bowl? Absolutely not. It won't happen. I don't think he's even taking them to the playoffs. But do I think he's taking your fantasy team to some
wins?
He's
not taking the playoffs.
Yes, he's a good option.
I'm much more nervous about the potential of a downfall than you. And for this season, sure, you can probably start him, at least in Superflex. He's a fine quarterback too. But I don't want him on my team for long term because I don't think he's the type of quarterback with staying power around the league. He strikes me much more, I don't know if this is a good comparison because that was his rookie season, but like a rookie season Trubisky, where he put up some fantasy points, he can run, but I still don't think he's that next level guy that he can actually lead a franchise for a long time. And at the quarterback position, I would much rather take my shots, even on someone who has a lot worse production, maybe like a Mac Jones, where you know you don't have that fantasy ceiling. But in a Superflex league, you need to have those starters. And Daniel Jones, I still absolutely have that fear that he might not be a starter in 2 years. So if I have him, unless I am absolutely relying on him to help out my win now team right now, I am trying to move him. Capitalize on the good production that he's put up so far. Because you're right, even though that team is 0-3, not really Daniel Jones' fault. He's been pretty decent. Then on the other side, there's a couple of rookies I want to talk about. And I want to, you know, monitor the amount of panic you have over these two. And let's start off with Zach Wilson.
I'm talking dinner plate sized red button, slam it panic with Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson is surrounded by disarray. He has not shown himself capable of being a Deshaun Watson type figure where he'll just run the entire offense himself and hope he's got a couple guys to help out. Totally fair. He's a rookie quarterback. He doesn't have the stature of Watson in this comparison. Zach Wilson is full level panic. He looks like Sam Darnold, but just a little bit more unrefined. And that's an issue. To be fair, again, you have Becton out. You have his offensive line looking porous. You have no running game. You have meek and meager wide receivers at best. But Zach Wilson himself, it's tough to diagnose. I feel bad sewering the guy because I feel like you throw him in like a Carson Wentz scenario.
Switch him and Mac Jones.
Well, yeah, sure. You switch him and Mac Jones. I think I'm not particularly worried with Wilson. Maybe Wilson is looked at in the same mediocre light that I see Mac Jones
exactly,
right now.
Yeah.
But right now, I just don't think you want any quarterback of the Jets, and they want Wilson long term. Of course they want him long term. They drafted him second overall. He's going to be there at least 4 years, in my opinion. And because of that, I don't want Wilson at all. It's so unfortunate, and I don't blame him fully. I don't think we've been able to properly appraise his abilities, but I'm out on Wilson.
Okay, you're more reactionary than I am. So we've seen three games out of him. The first game, if you remember, they lost to the apparently really good team, Carolina Panthers, and apparently a really good defense in the Carolina Panthers, and he did fine. He had 37 passing attempts, 20 completions, 258 yards, only one interception, and two touchdowns. He was fine in week one. Week two, against New England, atrocious. Four picks, terrible. Week three, against Denver, 0 points put on the board, two picks, atrocious again, only 160 passing yards in total. He's got three games. One was fine and two were awful. I do think he's been put through the ringer with those three defenses. Like the next couple weeks, he's got the Titans and the Falcons.
Be a good gauge.
He still has time and potential that he could turn it around. I know that he still has some legs that he hasn't really gotten to use, because if anything, he's just using those legs to scramble away from the many edge rushers cramming down his throat at this point. He has had no opportunity to succeed. It is tough when you are evaluating a guy like this, because yes, this offense looks atrocious. They look so bad. And you're banking on a guy making a significant enough step to turn his career around and become a useful fantasy guy. I think he still has the potential that we saw coming into the draft. Obviously, his value has only gone down at this point. But I do think there has to be a lot of people who drafted him who are looking at him in that light, thinking, full panic, sell him, I don't want him anymore. And just as a pure speculative future ad, I think I'd be willing to still pick him up as long as it's for a lot cheaper than you would have had to get him at the draft. The next rookie is Justin Fields. And this is a much, much smaller sample size.
Yeah.
One game.
I mean, he looked bad.
Very bad. I'm sure everyone saw the stat. The sacks that he took created a net negative yards that were only one fewer than his net positive passing yards. So he, as a passer, only netted one positive yard. A truly terrible first week against the Browns defense for Justin Fields and the Bears. And if you look anywhere on social media or ESPN or anything like that, pretty much all of the blame has fallen upon Matt Nagy. And I don't think that is actually 100% fair. I think Matt Nagy is a bad coach, 100%. I agree. He probably doesn't deserve to be a head coach in the NFL. He should probably be fired, all that. I'm in agreement. But Justin Fields also deserves some blame. I know he wasn't thrust into this role because, you know, that was not the original plan. But you still think a guy coming out from what we saw in college, we just did not see that at the NFL. He did not look good. He looked nervous. He looked scrambly. He was locked onto a single read, which a lot of people had concerns of that coming into the NFL. It's only negatives to this point. I do not want to panic yet. It's only 1 week, but yeah, his value has to go a little bit down from that first performance.
I think his value has to go especially down because you think of a guy like Fields and you think, ah, that rushing ability can be a saving grace. You know, when he has edge rushers and he's going to be able to go and pump out, you know, 80 yards on the ground all of a sudden. He did not prove able to.
Yeah.
Like, he was just running backwards or laterally and was not using his legs effectively.
How many times over the last few years have I personally talk to you about, it's so frustrating they weren't using Trubisky as the runner.
Like, so many times I feel like you are just echoing it.
Yeah, and now they have an even better runner and they're doing the same thing. It's so frustrating.
There's some offensive issues in Chicago.
That's 100%. All parties are to blame there. At tight end, let's move over there quickly. The first guy we kind of know is a dynasty asset. He's not going to be around for that long, but Rob Gronkowski.
What the heck, man?
He's been blowing up. And the only real question to have with him as the tight end two through 3 weeks is, Toby, is he a high-end tight end for the rest of this season?
It's shocking, but yes, I believe so. He's not a dynasty buy. He is a win-now type of person.
Oh,
if you're a contender and you're
of course.
I'll trade away Noah Fant for Rob Gronkowski somehow. I'll figure out this deal. I don't like it. It would just be not a one-for-one. It's part of
the
deal.
Yeah, I get it.
But if you're like, I need to win now, and I need to win right now, Gronk is getting targets from Brady like crazy. Brady trusts him, throws it in the end zone. It sounds like a narrative you hear out at a bar from 50-year-old dads. And it's somehow true. Like, Brady looks at Gronk in the end zone. There's at least three passes that Gronk has not dropped in the end zone, but have hit him or hit defenders.
Yeah, he could have more.
He genuinely could have a lot more.
Yeah.
Gronk is an asset going forwards, but 100%. Only for contenders to trade for, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. He doesn't have a lot of time left in the league. He's already been retired once. He's an aging guy. He apparently
He's already retired anymore. Once.
Yeah, that
I should
happened.
Have added that.
Yeah, that happened. He came back.
Oh, God, that's funny.
Yeah, I do agree, though. Gronk, at least as a red zone weapon, will be continually utilized. And I just want to say both things can be true. Number one, this three-game sample is an outlier. He's not going to perform to that level. But number two, he can still easily be a top five tight end. Yep. Both those things can absolutely be true. Yep. And I think they likely will be true.
In the other direction, the first three relatively disappointing games come from your tight end rookie sensation, Kyle Pitts.
Yep.
I mean, I saw it coming.
Yeah,
we
really
saw it
coming.
Deep Dive Dynasty, we were dissuading you against drafting Kyle Pitts early, especially in a league such as redraft, because Kyle Pitts is not going to get done what you're drafting him to do, particularly in his rookie season. And thus far, he has not.
If you look at Kyle Pitts' targets to this point, I think he has overachieved my expectations. He has actually been more relevant in the offense than I expected come the first 3 weeks. And a lot of people would really disagree with that because they drafted Kyle Pitts in the fifth round of redraft leagues. But I don't know what you guys were expecting, because banking on demolishing the tight end all-time record is a crazy bet to make. And one, I will say, he could still easily do it. He still can be the tight end one of all rookies of all time. Because that's not that high of a mark to reach. But you should not have expected immediate ridiculous production. And it hasn't happened yet. But I do still think he's going to be a tight end one. His target share is actually still fantastic for tight ends. We know he's incredibly talented. He's going to be used as a receiver. So no, I have no fears about Kyle Pitts going forward. This is exactly what I expected. But I will say, for a lot of the community, you guys should have tempered your expectations, because tight ends don't immediately produce. You can look across the board at other first round tight ends, and no, none of them were drafted as high as four, but there was still a lot of early round one drafted tight ends. Even if they have great production by the end of the rookie season, it didn't necessarily come right off the bat. So hold strong. He'll be fine.
The only point I have to kind of water that is that it's Calvin Ridley and a bunch of other dudes. And I think Kyle Pitts has the chance to say, hey, this is why I am the outlier. This is why I should be drafted so high. I'm better than Zacchaeus.
And Cordarrelle Patterson.
I'm better than Cordarrelle Patterson. I'm better than... You had a different Falcons tight end pop in the end zone the other week. I can't even remember who it was, okay? That's how irrelevant he was.
Yeah, it wasn't Hurst. It was
I'm
the
a little surprised. If Pitts was going to break out, he would have already done it, is my point. He's going to have a fine rookie season, and yes, I agree. You hold on, you do not panic, but he's not going to have the rookie season that some members thought he might. The final couple of tight ends we got to talk about come from the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the ugh, combo of Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, who they've had targets. Jonnu Smith in particular, he has had his targets.
They've been equal through this point. They both get like five a game.
They're just not getting it done.
Yeah, this weekend, Otobi was very upset with the six targets, one catch for negligible yards
sure was.
For Jonnu Smith. And yes, these two have been disappointing, and I think that is very telling about how this offense will be run. And obviously, there's a lot of factors that we didn't know how it was going to play out this year with these tight ends, both in their own utilization, with the fact that Mac Jones is the quarterback now, and neither of them have gotten the end zone yet to this point. It'll happen. I don't have fears that they are going to be absolutely completely useless to the point that they have been thus far, but you do need to temper your expectations for what you hoped they could be, what that upside was. Unless maybe one of them gets hurt and the other one can absorb all those targets, you pretty much need the entire tight end target share for one guy, for him to really emerge and be that tight end one we were hoping to find out of this offense. Neither of these guys, Henry or Jonnu Smith, they've both been downgraded significantly because this offense just isn't utilizing these tight ends in their offensive plans as we were hoping they might. I'm probably still holding them if they're on my roster just because I think this can only be the low point of their value, but as a true receiving talent in the NFL, someone you want to start in fantasy, I'm really hoping I have another option I can go to week in and week out. So that's it. That's our list of players who have either leveled up or leveled down for fantasy through the first 3 weeks of the NFL season. Before we finish off this episode, though, as always, we have our Dynasty Buy of the Week.
Know it.
Toby has five hints for me. If you want to know how this game works, you can read it in the description below. Toby, hit me with that first hint.
Hint number one. I'm 25 years old, I'm 5'10", and I'm the wide receiver 25.
So the hint that jumps off the page to me is 5'10". As the wide receiver 25, that is a very short wide receiver. So naturally, I've got to think of a more slot guy. Okay, this guy doesn't actually fit that role of the slot guy, but Toby might be saying this is a buy because he's much better than the wide receiver 25, and this is notoriously a fairly small receiver. How about Tyreek Hill?
I like it, but it's not Tyreek. My second hit. It's my third year in the league, and I just scored a touchdown this past Sunday.
Okay. No one's immediately coming to mind as one of those small receivers that got in the end zone this week, but third year wide receiver, still know that he's the wide receiver 25 to this point. He's a bit smaller at 5'10". I know this player had a few big drops this week, but I can't think of if, despite having a decent day, if he ended up finding the end zone. This could be dumb, but I'm pretty sure he's a third-year receiver. What about Marquise Hollywood Brown?
No, the really good Marquise Hollywood memes that I saw, you sent me one, but it is not.
Ah.
The third hint is that my team is currently 3-0.
Okay. I think I can name all the 3-0 teams. You got the Raiders, you got the Panthers, you've got the Denver Broncos, you've got the LA Rams, the Cardinals. And yeah, that's it. There's actually only five to this point, which is pretty wild. Okay, so guys that come to mind, and I can't think if some of these got a touchdown, but they're shorter guys, they've put up some points. DJ Moore, I'm not 100% sure if he's that small, but I think he's a fourth-year wide receiver. I don't think third. Hunter Renfro is another guy. I do believe he's a third receiver. I can't think if he got in the end zone this week, but he is definitely a possibility. Also, Christian Kirk is another guy. He's about that size. Third, maybe fourth year wide receiver makes some sense. And again, maybe my memory's bad, but I can't think of him getting in the end zone either, even though I know he put up a lot of yards. I really am not 100% sure this guy scored a touchdown, but I think everything else fits. Is this the balding man himself, Hunter Renfro?
It's the balding man himself, Hunter Renfro.
Okay.
Hunter Renfro's fantastic. Hunter Renfro, in my opinion, is a more elite Cole Beasley. He's a better route tree, and he's going to fit the same role of, hey, when Derek Carr inevitably is having huge down-the-field struggles with Ruggs and Bryan Edwards, who's unproven, Ruggs is unreliable, he's going to find Hunter Renfro. Hunter Renfro, go look at the routes this man is running. he is passing the eye test. He is beating people. His route tree is crazy. And he's going to be getting these dink and dunk targets as well as taking shots downfield. He's part of a Raiders offense right now that whatever the heck happens with Josh Jacobs, it's not going to be fantastic enough for them to rely on their running game. Waller's still the number one passing option, mm-hmm. and I understand that. Renfro has a role of his own in this offense, and thus far, he's been pretty damn fantastic. Hunter Renfro, target-wise, is 9-7-6. He finally found himself in the end zone last week and got himself up to 18.7. He's yet to have a single performance that isn't in double digits for fantasy points. I really like how Hunter Renfro is operating in this offense, and I really like him as a long-term buy because he seems to be an integral part of this offense, liked by Carr, liked by the Raiders, and he's a great route runner. He's good enough that he's going to find himself a role for years to come.
Mm-hmm. The way this offense has really moved through three games so far is that Carr really has spread the ball around to all three. Bryan Edwards has definitely got his looks. Henry Ruggs has led their wide receivers in yards so far, and I believe Hunter Renfro has led their wide receivers in receptions. So they've been using all three, clearly. It's quite the spread around scheme. And the reason why I agree that Renfro is probably undervalued is just that no one views him as having that long-term upside that the other two have. Both of these are sophomore guys besides Renfro, and they're still hanging on to that rookie hope. You only got him in your draft a year ago. These guys are being propped up by the potential that they may have. It is likely that these guys aren't going to quite hit their potential, and Renfro will be that steady third guy that people aren't hyping up yet will have very similar production as he has had through 3 weeks thus far. So he's one of those guys that is perennially underrated. So I think he's always a solid dynasty buy just because those slot wide receivers in these PPR dynasty leagues, no one really loves him. You know, you're saying he's like a Cole Beasley, that's a good comp. Cole Beasley, until I think last year, maybe the year before, no one ever really wanted the guy. He's always just been fine. But fine is putting up a decent amount of receptions and fantasy points for you year in and year out. So yes, I do think Hunter Renfro is a solid buy because the dynasty community probably will forever undervalue what Hunter Renfro brings to your dynasty team. That's it though, everyone. That is our 76th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty podcast. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty to keep up with everything we've got going on. Thank you so much for being here yet again, Toby.
Heck yeah.
And thank you guys all for listening. Have a good one.
Peace.